Town Band Banter with Doc and Dave. Every week, two longtime friends and colleagues in the world of music, David Price and Donald Doc Smith, get together to discuss the triumphs as well as the twists and turns of lifelong learning for the dedicated members of thousands of civilian community music ensembles of every shape and size. Your comments and suggestions are always welcomed through email as info@townbandbanter.com, Facebook, Town Band Banter, and Instagram, #TownBandBanter. And now for our hosts, Doc and Dave.
All right, we're up to episode 4 already.
No way. Come on, it can't be episode 4.
Oh,
already.
Yeah, it is. We haven't lost count yet. give us a chance that could come up. And I'm really excited about the guest we have today, because what we tried to do for the first 4 episodes was lay the groundwork for what we have in mind for the entire, however long this is going to go. You know, what
at least
what
a week or two. Yeah.
Well, we're way past that already. Right, we're 2.5 weeks and with a lot of hits. And thank you for everyone out there that's listening. No comments this week. I'm not sure whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. Right. But we sure would like to hear from you in the social media that was just read to you in the introduction. And then also I'll put it in the description down below so you could just link right to it. So today we have Dr. Joe Englund. And he's a guy I've known for since I started with the band, probably about 7 years or 8 years now, which is fantastic. And he has this interesting role. He's one of the guys that founded the Jamestown Community Band. And we will be doing things other than the Jamestown Community Band and things just in Rhode Island. It's just trying to lay the groundwork. It's the easiest way to do that. And we have great guests to lay out that groundwork. So why expand before we absolutely have to? But Joe is the general practitioner on the island of Jamestown, you know. So I often laugh. I'm not sure if I ever talked to you about this, Joe. But, you know, when people get nervous in a performance, you say, well, just try to picture everyone in their underwear. Well, Joe has literally seen everyone on the island.
Pretty much.
So that probably doesn't. Hopefully you don't get nervous, because that strategy wouldn't work for you at all.
I don't get nervous.
Now, how many general practitioners were there on Jamestown?
For a long time, it was just me. Then I brought in partners over the years. One stayed for 10 years. And then when I finally retired, I had 2 others. But they had a hard time keeping people after I left. You know, being a small town doc where you live there is a bit of a lifestyle challenge. You have to get used to the fact that going to the drugstore means you're working, or going to the market means you're working. Because the person in front of you will almost certainly have a seizure or something. You know?
Yeah, right.
So,
or a question.
It gets to be something that you have to get used to. And a lot of people would get burned out.
Right. Yeah. And it's getting hard enough to find general practitioners anywhere right now. Right. Yeah. There's a shortage everywhere, particularly in Rhode Island. My wife's, she's gone through 2 of them and had to try to find new ones. So that's where she's at.
Mine just retired, but thankfully one of my older partners actually had been working at URI and just came back to Jamestown. So I just went to see her the other day, which was very lucky, because it was like, oh, where am I going to go after mine retires? So
I hadn't thought about that. I thought you'd just go to the mirror, and it's not as easy as that. Well, why don't you tell us all about how this Jamestown Community Band came to pass? It's this fantastic story.
Yeah, well, pretty simple story, actually. I had been away from music for quite a while, and during medical training and residency, you're lucky if you get to sleep, so you don't have a lot of extra time. So my wife didn't even know I played any instruments, for that matter. So I had started just picking up the saxophone again after quite a few years, and I was playing with a bar band. So I guess it was the 10th year in Jamestown, where I went to the Memorial Day Parade. Everybody goes to the Memorial Day Parade. And the Memorial Day Parade usually consisted of the Rogers High School band from Newport and a couple of fire trucks and the Girl Scouts and the Boy Scouts and town council. And then that was about it.
Right. Yeah.
So
what else is there?
Yeah, what else do you need? It's a small town.
That's right.
However.
So, you know, I'm standing in front of good old Baker's Pharmacy, which doesn't exist anymore, with Tim Baker and my wife, and wait for the parade to come around the corner because there's a ceremony at the beginning of the parade at the cemetery. And then instead of a band coming around the corner was a vintage World War II Jeep with speakers on the front playing a Sousa march driving by with the Girl Scouts and the Boy Scouts and the town council and the fire trucks following. And I said to my wife, wow, this is terrible. There's got to be at least 10 people in town who play an instrument. So I just put an ad in the local paper, how many people are interested in joining a band. And I went up to Axelrod Music in Providence, if you remember.
Which also doesn't exist anymore, right?
And in their basement, they had tons of music, and I bought the first group of Sousa books. And that's all we had, you know, was Sousa books.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And realizing that, not knowing the level of musicians, that can be a little bit of a challenge. So
absolutely. That's
so
hard, yeah.
But that's what I bought. So we had a number of very good musicians show up and who could direct a couple of folks from the Navy. Not in the Navy band, but good musicians.
The Naval War College is right across the bay.
Yeah, the Naval War College people.
They have a band on base there.
Right.
It's quite good.
They were really good. And, you know, we just got three songs together. Of course, The Thunderer, which I hear in my sleep to this day.
It's Mrs. Sousa's favorite march.
Yeah.
And that apparently, yes.
Kind of is the theme song of the band is how I think of it. And then we did not do Stars and Stripes. That's a little bit too difficult. I think maybe we did Washington Post. And
I think Washington Post, because that's where we're playing. Right.
Yeah. And then I think we had one more in there. We may have just had two. But it was pretty memorable coming around that corner with like 12 people who were decent. I mean, we sounded decent for our first attempt. And the people got so excited. They just thought this was great. We did have uniforms. You know, we did have shirts made and we wore khaki pants. And, you know, looked semi...
Oh, for that very first one.
Semi-official.
Oh, yep. That's very cool.
The only option was that you could wear any hat you wanted, and that was encouraged. What a crazy hat you wanted. So it worked out well. And to be honest, I was still at a very busy time in life. I was playing in this bar band.
These were non-alcoholic drinks that you were talking
about.
Yeah,
yes, absolutely.
Being a doctor and all.
Yeah,
that.
Oh, no. Actually, three of us in the band are doctors. We're doctors.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Two were engineers and one was an auto mechanic. But anyway.
Like, there's a difference.
He was the, since we're broadcasting, he was the car guy on WHJ. Why radio? So he was a pretty handy guy to have around. You know, hey, Paul, let me ask you a question. Just like people would ask me questions. Hey,
yeah, only if you tell me what's going on with my spleen.
Yeah right. Yes. Exactly. We would trade off. Yeah. So we had an ophthalmologist on keyboard. The lead singer, another keyboardist, is a urologist, and me as a family doctor. But so it was kind of interesting playing in Newport because we worked out of Newport Hospital. So all of a sudden you hear some drunk person from the car going, Dr. England, you know, and you'd have to get used to that, but it was fun. It was a fun 25 years. That's how the town band started. So being busy with all these things, my message to the town band was I am interested in having the parades covered, but I'm not sure I'm going to be making Tuesday night practices because, you know, I got young kids. I got a busy practice, and I'm just not at that point in my life. So, thankfully, people like Tom Wiggins and the Peases, Sue Nicholson, and
we have three siblings.
The
Pease family, two sisters and a brother.
Yeah, a couple things happened. There was a guy who came up to me who I knew, and he said, you know, I don't play any instruments, but I know a lot about administration.
Well,
now I'm glad to do a lot of that work for you. And it was like, yeah. So he formed the 501c3 corporation, got that all together for us. And he was helpful in ordering, he ended up ordering uniforms and doing all that stuff.
Great.
What about
library work?
Yeah, he didn't do library work.
Well, you didn't
work.
Have much of a library at that point anyway.
We had one book.
Two Sousa songs.
Yeah, one book was it. You know, what are you going to do?
Page three today.
Yeah, so it was...
Again.
Again.
So I, at this point, would would show up, you know, traditionally a week or two before the parades and then show up for the parades. And then I was just amazed at how things were progressing. The band was getting bigger.
Were you doing sit-down concerts too or just the parades?
Initially, no, but I'm trying to think of who the first band director brought in was a guy named Chris Ashton, who was the middle school music teacher at the school, and he was a Berkeley guy.
And that's why you rehearsed at the school.
Yeah, initially.
He was the teacher there, right?
And very sad but odd story, I'm making rounds in the hospital one day, and I hear, you know, code blue emergency room. I figured out it was him.
Wow.
He had a congenital heart defect, and he had a cardiac arrest and died at the age of 28.
Wow.
So he was the first director. And then there were a number of other directors in between that I didn't know very well. I knew Chris quite well. And so with concerts becoming part of the performance, it became very important. And then Don, being there since 2016.
That's correct. Right? Yes, yeah. I think so.
Has made just a tremendous difference. I mean, it's really a challenge.
For the better
to play.
Or for the worse.
Yeah, no,
we better clarify. Folks wouldn't know. No, I'm just kidding. It's been a joy. You know.
Like, yeah, no, I think, you know, you have the ability to kind of read the room, see what you have available, and then make it work, you know, and get people to do what you need them to do. And I think you've done an amazing job of developing a real concert band, which I don't think anybody ever predicted was going to happen with this. I mean, I was initially happy with 10 people reading 3 Susan Watchers, barely making it down the street. That was great. And they weren't drunk. And to have it end up as it is right now, I think is pretty phenomenal. I mean, I think the concert performances are surprise people. You know, I think the people in the audiences are just like, wow, this is our community band, you know? So I think it's really, for me, it's been a lot of fun coming back into the band. And the thing that I found really challenging is just being a rock and roll cover band, you know, you listen to the parts and then you just play them. I wasn't reading music for like 20 years.
Right,
I was just, yeah, play the song. All right, I got it.
We have a brand new clarinet player who's in the same boot right now. He's trying to figure out how to get reading chops together.
Get it back.
Yeah.
You know, in my teenage years, I played in a big band, swing band, called the Young Rhode Islanders, which doesn't exist anymore.
I didn't know you played in it with Mark Bedroia. You know, I know a bunch of people.
You know,
who played
people
in
who
that.
Were in the Young Rhode Islanders.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So that was,
well, they
you
got
know,
older. They're not young anymore.
They all got older. Yeah. So that was all, you know, really good sight reading swing music. And I have to say that with aging and vision, and certainly my sight reading never went back to that. You know, too many years away and just playing by ear. But I love that challenge. I think that challenge of getting back into sight reading, and especially when, as a baritone sax player, my part has nothing to do with the main melody, but you got to play
it right. Well, sometimes.
Rarely.
Yeah. Like in a polka.
Yeah, in a polka.
They play da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Yeah, the one we're doing tomorrow night.
But it's actually fun to know that those little accents that get interspersed in the music are important, and they're kind of fun. And you have to play them right. And sometimes I find it, and I think a lot of people do, much more challenging to count 6 measures of rest and then a beat and have to hit one note as an accent and have that be in the right time, in the right place.
Oh, yeah. Well, you only have to do that right once, right?
Yeah,
during
you
the concert.
Do it right
you
once.
Know, like everyone feels so much better if you do it in between.
Welcome to the percussionist world.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Count 65 measures, and then you miss the cymbal crash. Right? Like, heck. You know?
Well, once again, thank you very much, Joe. And you actually, thank you again, because you probably set up our very next transition into what we really, the heart of what we wanted to talk about from the perspective of a general practitioner. Some of the concerns, and the reason that Dave and I put this whole podcast together, where lifelong learner and, you know, like that double-edged sword of that it's really helping, but there are things as you age that are going to get in the road. And we could do this in any order, but what we're thinking are cognitive, visual, audio, physical, and then socialization, you know, like all of that balanced out. So you just take on the first one and we'll try to get through all of those and do an outline. And then we'll try to have specialists in on each one of those as an episode somewhere later on. Specialists who actually play an instrument. So yeah, right. We'll get their perspective.
Yeah. Well, if we talk about the cognitive end of things, we all know that we have some members in the band who are older and having some cognitive issues. And I don't think there's anything that could be better for them than to continue playing and using their talents and meeting in a social group with other people, and certainly helps with mood as well.
I recently talked to one of the guys that was really struggling with that. You know, after a concert, we got together and he wanted to talk about it too. And he said, you know what, when I'm in a raster, I'm holding a long note. I just lose it. I don't know where I'm at.
Right.
You know, like he goes, that's the hardest part. He goes, when I'm playing a rhythmic part, it seems like I'm fine. But then I really struggle getting back into where I'm supposed to be too. So we talked about all of that, and you know, like I'm trying to give him special cues, you know, so to help him with that. But it was kind of neat that he was aware of what the issue was, but just didn't know how to resolve it. And particularly when you're doing the music, when you're, you know, working in real time.
Rhythmic cues are very interesting. One of my hats was I was doing the medical care on the Vanderbilt Rehabilitation Unit for 10 years besides my practice. So that include people with strokes, Guillain-Barré syndrome, head injuries, spinal cord injuries, all sorts of stuff. But so many people who have, say, speech problems, and you're talking to them and you don't have much of a cadence to your speech, they don't understand you as well. And right. Then if you start singing, they'll understand you.
Yeah.
Same thing if you have a Parkinson's person who can't initiate their step. If you go 1, 2, 3, you know, like you're starting, son of a gun, they can do it.
There's that whole thing with boxing,
Parkinson's,
which is probably the same sort of thing,
rhythmic.
Setting up a rhythm, right?
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about it that way.
Yeah.
I had a program that I did down a few years back where I would go around to assisted living places and memory care centers.
Yeah.
And I would bring drums in.
Oh, absolutely.
We would do like a drum circle and music and things of that sort. And I was always amazed at the ability, you know, a person couldn't even put a sentence together. And then all of a sudden they're singing along with you in the song.
It's incredible.
And I was also really amazed with Parkinson's people, how they would often be very stiff or they were shaking and things of that sort. And as soon as the music starts, they could bang away. I'm banging on the drums as well as anybody.
Yeah.
And that was always a great curiosity. You know, what is the connection? Is there anything therapeutically that can be done that will help?
Yeah. So those diseases, Parkinson's and Alzheimer's disease, and then there's others, are deposition diseases, meaning you're getting abnormal protein depositions in areas of the brain. So you can't change that. But you can use those rhythm tricks for quite a long time to their benefit. You know, a lot of people with strokes and with Parkinson's have trouble when they get to doorways for some strange reason. And you just say, okay, 1, 2, 3, and they'll walk through the doorway. It's so bizarre.
Yeah. And the other stuff about, you know, like obviously the brain hangs on to what it absolutely needs to survive. And oddly enough, music is one of the last things to leave. Like someone can't remember anyone's name from their family or recognize them, what they had for lunch or any detail, how to get dressed anymore, but could sing 5 verses of a song they learned when they were a child.
That's incredible.
Somewhere in that brain there somewhere and mixed it in and within recall. You know,
sometimes
like that's,
in a different language.
Right. Yeah. It's just really remarkable. So that's cognitive. I think you brought up before visual. Yeah.
I mean, everybody, you know, I don't know if anybody gets away without some visual problems by age 60, at least having to wear reading glasses. But, you know, personally, I struggle with that. I did LASIK surgery, and I had my eyes done differently. I have a reading eye and a distance eye. And as I get older...
I didn't know they did that.
Yeah, each one doesn't know which one to work, you know, and
keep
moving back and forth. So I recently had some glasses made that help out a bit, but it's still a challenge.
But then the glasses have to be different on each side too. Well,
they
always are,
they
right?
Are different
anyway,
on each side, yeah.
Oh wow, that's incredible.
So and I'm getting cataracts and I have glaucoma.
Yay!
So all of these things happen that begin to get in the way.
Can I get you an eye patch or anything like
Jeez, I'll tell you. You know, I'm ready for those sunglasses all the time.
Well, Dave, you did that the other day at Romps. You said, how many people have had eye surgery here?
Right.
And half of the band raised their hand. How many people have had heart surgery and the other half?
And it gets to the point, which is kind of interesting, that people start looking forward to their cataract surgery.
Right.
Because you're going to get it corrected.
And it's so much easier to go through now than it used to be.
Right. Yeah. And I'm actually be making that decision next week. But it's everybody. I mean, I always say, and nobody likes to hear this, that, you know, life expectancy in the year 1900 was 45.
Right.
So we're living with normal aging changes that people never dealt with because they never lived that long.
Right.
And so we're lucky to be able to dealing with those changes that the sciences are getting so good to help us with that.
Yeah. And even as simple as I brought up the lights on the stand lights technology has gotten so much better and so much more accessible. I think that's helping people.
Less flicker.
And with different shades too. Yeah. They can change the shade.
Fluorescent lights get more difficult.
Right. Yeah.
Like in our certainly in our band room.
Quick question for you. Yeah. Just playing devil's advocate.
Yeah.
You're directing a band. You have a talent band. You're very proud of. You know, like to be able to, you know, how to entertainment value. And there's so many different values to it. At some point, as director, do you say to somebody, you know, no, I'm sorry, it's not working out. What do you do with that?
I think we can... I mean, the original goal of the band was to be a parade band, be a community organization, and I think the benefit to the people, unless they're being, say they're developing a dementia and they're becoming angry and having outbursts and those kind of things, you know. But if they're just making mistakes, I think you can work with them and have them just lay back on certain parts and just not play then, but still work with them, you know, and I think still try, because I think that's so important to them. And whether we're perfect in our performance versus helping people out who are developing disabilities, I think we can blend the two.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, we got
that's one of the reasons
thought.
We wanted to do this, to try to find ways about it. And, and the reason absolutely. Dave asked that question was, and I didn't have him ask it because we're asking you to leave. But no. So
there's no hint there, pal.
Some nights you should do it.
Let's
play, but.
Move on to Arl. because I've noticed this, you know, with the loss of upper, you know, like able to hear the higher frequencies, which is what we use to tune. That's really an issue, particularly in the upper woodwinds. You know, like people just can't hear whether they're in tune or not. Intonation is awareness. It's all about awareness, 100% awareness. But then if you physically can't hear it either, it just makes it really difficult. And then it impacts the rest of the ensemble.
At least when tuning, you can have everybody use their phone, maybe, but that doesn't help them when they're playing.
That has really changed, you know, like intonation in general. We don't have to spend as much time practicing B flat.
Yeah.
Why are they always practicing that same note? But, you know, RL for, you know, like for that, I mean, they're at the apparatus for Arl as well, too. Hearing aids have improved so much than what we've had in the past that may help solve that, you know. And then cochlear, you know, like they're the ones that go through the bone. I have a set of headphones.
Oh, the cochlear implants.
Fantastic, you know, that it just goes through the bone. It doesn't go into my ear
conduction.
At all. Bone conduction, So, and I love them, you know, because when I'm on my bike or something like that, I can hear everything around me, but I'm really hearing a high quality of sound. You know, it's fantastic. All right. So what else? Yeah. What else are we going to get out? Physical? And then we could do socialization last would be.
Well, there are some physical problems. You know, we have people every year. It's kind of the new no parade group every year.
Right.
You know? And some of them will like wait at the cemeteries to then play with us for the cemetery protocol. And then at their own speed, they'll walk down the street and meet us at the next cemetery.
Yeah, there's two places that we played a flag ceremony at the bottom of the hill.
But physically, I mean, I find because I have asthma that which has gotten worse as I get old. But you know, we were not made to blow out all the time and then walk uphill. That just doesn't work well. And so that gets really difficult. I can foresee with the aging of our town band, we could have a problem with parades as we're...
Well, we've just brought in some more middle-aged, and we have a couple young kids playing, too. So
thankfully.
It's so hard to get the younger kids to participate.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just because they're tied up with their school bands or what, but sports interference and things.
I know one of the things you were really after was socialization. We kind of hit on that.
Yeah, I certainly noticed since I retired, and certainly we all felt it during COVID. I was still working during COVID, but even so, it was such an isolation mentality that it took a while to break out of that. And there's certainly so many studies that show that socialization in later years contributes to longevity and quality of life, that the band becomes an outlet for that. And, you know, you watch, we've had, in the last year, we've had two people lose their spouses. They still can come to band every week and see people they know. Still feel like a part of a group. I mean, that stuff is just so important. That's
well, there
critical.
Was particularly that one incident. Remember, I called you in on it. One of our band members had lost her husband that morning.
Yes.
And came to rehearsal.
And she came. Because
she said, because this is what I need to be.
This she needed to do. Yeah.
Right. So I called Joe right away because he had been doing hospice, and it wasn't a surprise. You know, her husband had been ailing for quite a time.
Yeah.
But still, you know, like I brought Joe on board and said, will you check on her and make sure this is – and he said, she's fine.
Yeah, she had really
processed
gone through
everything.
The pre-grieving process of having somebody with a chronic disease with the outcome being known for a long time. But that's a great example of how important a community organization like the band is.
We haven't had too many – we had two spouses die this year, but we had that one year that we lost three band members.
Yes.
And that's when it really hit me, too, because out of the three band members that we lost, when I went to the wakes, there was a sign that said in their obituary, in lieu of flowers, make a donation to the Jamestown Community Band.
Right.
And then when I talked to the spouses and the families, they said this is all they talked about. This was the most important thing in their life. This is what kept them going.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, my God. You know, like I had no idea. You know, I knew it was important, but I had no idea how important it was to some of these folks. So that changes how I prepare for rehearsals and run rehearsals, too.
Yeah. I mean, you do a great job. I think that everybody feels connected. Everybody feels that their part is important. And everybody, as a human being, wants to do a good job. So if they do a good job and they take pride in that... that feeling of satisfaction at the end of a concert, it adds years to your life. You know, it really does. Yeah.
Absolutely. How many other folks have people applauding for them, you know, for anything?
Right.
It was some years back when I started a band in Wakefield.
Yeah.
And one of the things I was concerned about when I first started was that, are these people going to continue to come to rehearsal? So I was really concerned about that. You know, it's like Doc, you know, choosing the right materials, and you really kind of assess the room, what you got. And, you know, they were always there. They were always there at rehearsal. They would, you know, they'd go if they had a family thing to have to be, or they were going on vacation or something like that. They were always, you could rely on them. They would be there.
Yeah.
I had some interesting characters, so very quickly. One was a doctor.
Yeah.
And he was the medical, what do you call them when they go on? They
medical examiner.
The medical examiner? Yeah. And he would come to
clarinet
rehearsal.
Clarinet player?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He would come to rehearsal packing. He had a gun.
Yeah.
He would have it on his belt. And, you know, people look at, what's he got a gun for? You know, well, you know, he felt that he
play
needed to
tune,
carry one.
Or else.
You know, yeah. And he was a character. He'd show me pictures during, we had a little break time.
Yeah.
He'd show me, oh, look at this, see? This guy must have jumped off the water tower. See the way he landed? Now look at his feet, the way they're, you know. And I'm mortified looking at this picture of this guy, but he was such a character.
He used to play in the Jamestown band, too.
Did he really?
Yeah.
He was such a character. And I said, these are the types of characters that just make these groups come alive.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, oh, really? There was just one.
EJ. His name was EJ.
EJ? I don't remember his name.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
All right. Well, we have some questions for you. Come right back with that.
Yeah. All right. We don't know if you have answers, but we have questions. Yeah.
Okay. So we have a couple questions for you. Number one, these are questions we ask every guest. Yeah. Number one is, what was your most memorable experience with a community music ensemble?
Well, if I go way back to my, this is not community, I guess it is a community thing, but the Young Rhode Islanders.
Right.
We had a director who was kind of a stage director, but we really had our educational director who ran rehearsals. And he was a former trombonist with Tommy Dorsey.
Wow.
And so we were, I think, doing something at PPAC. And somehow our band director found out that Duke Ellington was in town. And Duke Ellington came over, and we all got to shake his hand.
Wow, how cool is that?
Yeah. That's great. So like 15 years old.
Yeah,
and get to shake Duke Ellington's hand. So that's a very memorable experience for me.
That's great.
And learned something very interesting, which I always thought was weird. He would not drink cold water. He only drank warm water. Why, I don't know.
Okay. Maybe I'll start doing that.
That's a good Jeopardy question.
I don't know. I'll take any hint I can fathom at this point. Yeah. How did participating in a music ensemble affect you?
I think it's always affected me the same way, where you want to feel when it's over and done with, not necessarily in rehearsal, but that
during the concert, during the performance,
concerts, that you get satisfaction from doing a good job. That's how it usually affects me. It's like, okay, did my job. That was good. You know, now, if you didn't do your job and you had a bad night, that just makes you say, gee, you got to try that a little more, practice a little more. So it works both ways. But it has that positive reward effect. I think there's must be a dopamine flow that happens in the last song of a concert or something.
It could be. Yeah. It goes by so quickly. What doesn't go by so quickly is the process. Rehearsals, you know, and that's where I kind of focus most of that. The concert's just one little teeny part of the whole cycle,
right?
You know, and the process is really, really important too. So try to interject some of those along the way, you know, compliments along the way. Maybe you guys will get a compliment somewhere, you know, during a rehearsal someday.
Yeah.
No,
yeah,
I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Well, hopefully.
No, so, I keep throwing it your way, Dave, but you know, like.
You know, and the interesting thing is, you know, I think everybody is their own critic. So I think that's part of playing music. And so, you know, you don't necessarily need that. You know when you screw up and you're like, damn, I'm going to go back and try that again. So, but if it was real easy, you wouldn't get that much satisfaction out of it.
Well,
you like the challenge.
Easy things very well, you know, musically. Yeah. All right, number three, what was a big challenge with an ensemble and how was it overcome?
I think it's a general big challenge, and that was for many years I played alto and tenor saxophone, and for the last 6 or 7 years I've been playing baritone, and sometimes it can be incredibly difficult to not come out with this really loud sound when you shouldn't. And the real challenge is, can you play very low notes quietly?
Right, yeah.
And that is what I think about all the time. And you're good. You kind of look at me like, what are you doing? And I'm like, yeah, that kind of
slipped out. In an encouraging and loving way. Yeah, I'm sure.
That kind of slipped out, didn't it? Yeah. And so it's that is a real challenge.
When you have that horn in your hand, everyone knows if you played a little bit too loud.
Yeah.
Everyone.
Yeah. You know, you can't help it, you know.
But it is a challenge. It could be reed strength.
It can.
You can mess around with reed strength.
Oh, I've done that. I've done that. I haven't changed different mouthpieces.
Something, it's kind of like the golfers who, you know, buy another $600 driver left and right, you know. But I've known people that went through a dozen mouthpieces.
Oh, yeah.
All $300.
On my other saxophones, I've been through.
Yeah,
quite a few, but
that could be a secret too.
That could be. I mean, and I think I'm doing a better job.
Well, no, absolutely. No, you are.
You know, I think I'm doing a better job.
And it's all about awareness, and you're aware of it.
I'm aware of it.
You're like, we're on the right path.
You know, if you, and it's all about embouchure, and you're really thinking about opening your throat and getting even flow at those notes. Because if you don't get enough flow, no sound comes out.
Right. Yeah.
You get too much flow, you're blowing the whole stage away. So that's been my challenge. And I look at it as a good challenge And I continue to work at it. And
you had brought up the reading thing too.
The reading is still a cool. Yeah. And the vision issue is playing a role in that. It'll be interesting because I know I will have cataract surgery sometime in the next year, probably. How much of a difference that makes. But yeah, the moving back and forth in the seat to kind of see the and that's just all part of normal aging. I'm not complaining about it. It's just what it is.
Is that the thing? Normal aging.
Yeah. You know, well, none of us are getting out alive, so.
I know what that's
So, yeah, it has to happen. Yeah,
that's great. The Grim Reaper is 100% record.
Yeah.
1,000% batting average. Well, thank you so much for doing this, Joe. We really appreciated your insights and all of this. I learned a lot, you know, I always do when I chat with you about all sorts of ranges of issues before and after rehearsals. And we appreciate you coming out today and look forward to seeing you tomorrow night at the concert.
Tomorrow.
We'll get our applause factor.
We're going to make this work.
We're looking forward to all that applause factor coming and rewarding you and then treats at the end as well.
Right.
Although we're busy moving stands, so sometimes we miss out on that. So it's better that we're not into all that nasty food. It is good to have that. Well, thanks again, Joe.
Dave. Thank you very much.
We'll see everyone in episode. Why do we always say see? We're not going to see you.
Well,
and you're not going to see us.
Yeah.
Well, we'll talk to you during episode 5, and we're looking forward to that sometime next week.
Yeah.
Please remember to click follow and share this with your friends, other band geeks. And until then, just keep on playing.